PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is Mr. Eric Steuben. He is of Odyssey fame, and I'm going to let you speak for yourself, Eric, and tell everyone what your story is over there at Odyssey.
Yeah, I think fame is probably too grand of a word. I do work at Odyssey. I work in R&D as our manager of the R&D department, coming up on about 10 years here at Odyssey. So started in 2015 as an intern, graduated in 2016, and then have been working in putter R&D ever since. So been here for a lot now, which kind of feels weird. I started as the young guy and I'm moving up into being one of the older guys, but I'm excited to be here today and to talk to you.
That's awesome. I'm thrilled to have you on the show. And Odyssey has had an unbelievably storied past in the game of golf, especially putting, where everyone gets the most amount of emotion out, I think, at least compared to my nine-year-old and the way he acts when he misses a putt. So I'd love to know your progression over the 10 years that you've had at Odyssey. Where did it start and how did you progress through the ranks into the position you're in now?
Well, I mean, it kind of started, I guess, before I got here. I always laugh because Callaway always recruited at Cal Poly, which is where I went to college and did a lot of career fairs and things like that. And when I was a sophomore, you kind of get into the engineering classes and I was like, man, I hate like the gears and things like that. Like I didn't like that kind of stuff. Loved math, loved applying it. And I've always been a huge sports fan. So when Callaway came, I was like, yeah, that is exactly what I want to do. So, kind of started doing some projects that were tailored towards golf. I got the internship here. And then, like I said, kind of started in 2015 and then full time in 16 as an associate engineer and then just slowly worked my way up. But it's been really, really fun to see Odyssey kind of evolve over the time that I've been here. And just it's been fun to be part of an organization like Odyssey that has a pretty good storied past or an impressive storied past just within the game of golf itself over the past, 30 whatever years Odyssey's been a company.
Yeah, it's fun to see the progression, but also the cautious amount of change that's required for a company that has that sort of committed group of people who absolutely insist on playing an Odyssey putter. And I think if you look down, let's say the tours or whatever it may be, the folks who aren't signed by anyone typically have at least had an Odyssey putter in play at one point or have considered it. No different when I go to my golf course, the amount of Odyssey inserts there are significant. Yeah. But it also gives me a chance to sit back and think like, you talk about 10 years from an R&D perspective, it's a lot more visual in putters, I think, than it is in a driver, because a driver usually looks fairly similar. Whereas in putters, you get to see a lot of those iterations. Like I remember micro hinge and different metal inserts. Metal mesh and things like that. You see those visual changes. Now with AI1, there's some huge concepts that are so visual on the putter. And I'd love to know, what was the big story when you first started? What was Odyssey doing at that specific time?
Well, that's a great question. We had Fusion RX inserts where the metal mesh was falling off the face. So it wasn't a good first story for Odyssey when I started. but behind the scenes was a lot of work that some guys were putting into micro hinge. And I remember it kind of starting when I was an intern. Of course, I didn't really have anything to do with it at that time. And then when I came back full time 9 months later, they had gotten a really, really good prototype. So I was really just kind of, I guess I got to keep it kind of PC, but I was put down in the lab to do just a lot of the robot work of going and testing it. And I wasn't doing any of the development or anything like that, but it was really, really cool to see. And it was the first time that we'd had an insert that had a really just demonstrable step up in topspin. And to see those numbers come up on the screen in Quintic, I mean, I'm down there hitting hundreds of putts on the robot and you really start to get a feel for how good the numbers are. And so that was kind of the first big thing. And we launched that then in 2016 or 16 or 17, one of the two. I think it was 17 we launched that in, and then more of them in 18. And then all the way through, I think 2020 was the last iteration of it. But it was really, really cool to see that develop and then get to work on the progressions after that into White Hot Micro Hinge and Micro Hinge Star. A really fun insert to work on. It's been fun to see how sticky that's been on all the global tours. You get a lot of people that still love it. I still love playing with it from time to time when I grab an old putter out. But yeah, that was kind of the first thing that we were working on that was really exciting.
Yeah, it's interesting watching the way people react to it, because you have something you can carry over in White Hot and or something like a Tri-Hot or whatever it may be. There is enough of familiarity there where you can take a chance and bring people along with you who are completely invested in a product style. I've played milled putters for forever, so going to something like a White Hot is a big change for me. But I'm always fascinated when I do, because it's such a unique experience. And everyone who I know who plays one is absolutely deeply invested, almost to the point where they're like afraid to go away from it, because it's so like connected to their soul. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It feels completely different. And it was interesting when Microhinge first came out, was kind of, you know, Chrome Soft had really grown, and even the tour balls got softer that year. So there was a big kind of knock on Microhinge for how soft it was. And a lot of people saying what you're seeing, you go to it and this feels too soft. But it's been really interesting to see over the years as the tour balls have gotten back to being a little bit firmer, and those that liked Microhinge or even White Hot in the first place have spoken very, very highly of Microhinge. So now, and I know we'll talk about this a little bit, but we're coming back to even softer inserts just because that's been the desire over the past year or two.
Really? Interesting. Yeah, we will get to that, I promise you. But I'm still very curious, not so much from what you've worked on, but also what you've had in the bag. I'll let you limit it to, like, let's say three heads. I assume you're a golfer. Everyone who is a Callaway guy is a golfer, right?
Yeah, I'm currently working through some borderline driver yips, but I love playing golf. I play a ton of golf.
Okay, so give me, like, in your 10 years of being there, are there three putters that have withstood the test of time in the bag for you and have really stood out?
Yeah. The first one, and it kind of goes, there are a couple of them in here, but I'll kind of condense it down to one. But that Toulon Atlanta or Odyssey 3T shape that we had, and specifically that Microhinge 3T, between those two, I kind of just stuck in that mid-mallet, not quite half moon, but with a flatter back type of shape for a long time. And we had a Toulon Atlanta that got milled in-house here that kind of got dinged up, that just kind of fell into my lap after about 6 months of it sitting there and nobody wanting it on tour, that had a flow neck on it that I played for a long time. So I guess we'll count these as two separate. I'm changing my mind here. So that would be one. And then one of the three tees that we did, I still come back to it and play with it every once in a while. We did it for a player who's not on our staff. Let's just say he's on a competitor and a top five player in the world, and played a three tee for like 3 weeks at one point. And we made it for him, and his coach was asking for one that had 45 degrees of toe hang. So we tip cut a single bend. We had it all built up. And then like 2 days later, he signed with the competitor. So that putter also never made it out the door and made it into my cubicle and then into my bag for quite a while. And still from time to time, we'll see a month or so where I go back to it. Microhinge insert, silver head. It was machined in-house. It looks really clean. And then recently, we actually prototyped for Xander Schauffele his head in a AI1 milled. So I had that titanium insert, crank hosel number 7, built up to his spec. So it's a little bit on the lighter side relative to production or most tour putters. And he didn't like it. It kind of fell into my lap again. And after about 6 months, nobody was asking for it. So I started playing with it. And that's been one that I've gamed most of the time for the past 2 or 3 years. And I work in putter R&D. I mean, it changes a lot, don't get me wrong. But if I really need to go back to something that works, that is absolutely what I'll go back to. So
Eric Steuben, the leftover king of Callaway or of Odyssey.
100% and shameless about it too.
I love that.
Yeah, the tour rejects are my favorites.
Well, so there are, you know, thousands of THP members that absolutely are eating that story up right now and are in love with the idea of like, oh, if it ever fell off a truck, like I hope it lands into my, you know, golf bag and, you know, whatever it might be. It's the conversation we always have. Like if you're at a candy shop, you may as well have some candy. You know, it's just like there's this deep investment in mixing it up or trying new things or, you know, having opportunity to try things that people don't have. I remember the last time I was in town, I was hanging out with Michael Verska, who's a legend of the business, and we're messing around with a couple of the tour heads, like the T-stamp heads, and man, it's just fun to have or touch or see the things that would not normally be available, as you're sort of mentioning here. But it also brings me back to another question I love to ask folks in R&D. The options for putters are absolutely endless, from alignment lines to presentation to toe hang. How hard is it for you on a yearly basis to limit the amount of options people have to where guys who are trying to sell them are saying, like, chill out on the SKUs here?
Dan, it's impossible. It is quite literally the battle that we fight every year. And if you look at kind of over the last 2 years with AI1, and then we line extended it into some new shapes and new hosel offerings, we kind of got into that wide range of SKUs, maybe max, we'll call it, where we started to get customers being a little bit frustrated with us. So then, you know, as we go into next year, kind of boil that down a little bit, go closer to what our greatest hits are. But it's just a fine line. I mean, you're never going to please everybody. At some point, you got to please your biggest customers. And at some point, you want to, you know, get creative and do some things differently and have some SKUs out there that you haven't had in a while. So I'm really happy. I have some input on it now, but I'm definitely not in charge of it. My input's, you know, like that much. It kind of makes me happy. I don't have to make the final decisions. I love putters. I would have tons of SKUs every single year. But the nice part is that as manufacturing has developed and we've continued to get better at it, we're able to do a lot more of them for tour. And that allows us to then to go and release more if we want to, that we already have done. They're sitting there waiting. We have them for tour. We can make more if we have to. We have tooling done. So it's kind of expanded our options for following years if something does get hot, or if we decide that we really like something and want to release it. So we can start small and then it's easier to expand.
Yeah, I think the 7 is a really interesting example, because there are so many different ways to get that head into people's hands, whether it's a double bend or a slant or a flow or a plumber's neck. Like, there are plenty of good reasons why that should look the way it looks. And that doesn't even get into, you know, can we send one out naked? Can we put one with a top dot or a line or a, you know, flange line? There's so many options I think people don't really pay attention to, just on head or alignment aid and neck options. It's like, I would go nuts trying to land on something, because what works for me doesn't work for you, even if our putting stroke looks the same.
Yep, that's exactly right. I mean, it's pretty much impossible. The 7, you're right, is the perfect example, especially when it comes to what we're actually releasing, because you've got Xander in the 7 in a crank hosel, Sam Burns, another marquee player of ours, in the S neck. Most people think of a mallet as a double bend or a face balance version. So you can make a really good case for all three of those. But then if you're releasing 3 number 7s, that's 3 SKUs just in one head shape alone. So then the customer starts to get a little bit, they start asking some questions, and then it limits what you can do in other head shapes. It's really hard, but we end up bringing those all in for tour, and all the tour heads actually come in with no lines on them. So okay, those are all machined in-house based on what our tour team or a player requests. So
are you getting a lot of engagement from folks that say, well, I want the specific putter that Xander uses? And they, even if it's not like perfect for their stroke, they want that specific neck that he's using. And that is ends up being in line for the next iteration. Is tour dictating more of that than we think?
We definitely take a lot of feedback from tour. Yes and no. I mean, we're really close with our tour team. Myself, I'm close with, we've got Joe, our tour manager. We've got Cody Hale, who's our Odyssey rep. And then even out on the other tours, whether it's Mary on LPGA, Mata over on the Korn Ferry Tour, we take a lot of input from them. And Jacob, who is the GM of Odyssey, Jacob Davidson, he's also the head of our North America tours. His title's like 9 words long, so maybe I have that slightly wrong. But so we work really, really closely. They do probably dictate more than you think, at least in terms of neck styles and just things that are popular or are well-received out on tour. But ultimately, you know, it comes down to sales numbers and what we've sold more of over the past year that dictates the most of what we release.
Okay. I have one more question before we move into the new lineup. And I think this has been a trend that has been slowly taking over. It upsets me in a great way, because I'm an absolute blade purist by heart. I can't help myself. It ends up being in the bag all day long, but there seems to be a pretty aggressive trend that mallets are sort of taking over at this point. Is that an accurate perspective based on SKUs alone?
100%. I'm with you. I had to switch back to blade. I grew up playing a Ping Zing 2 shamelessly. Was not an Odyssey guy growing up, but I just, that was what we had, what the course, my local course recommended, and I played it for several years. And finally this year I had to go back to a blade. I got a little bit mental over the golf ball and the greens, and I was like, I need to go back to a blade, need to be a bit of a purist. But it's just not what's showing up in the marketplace. I mean, somewhere between 75 and 85% of all the putters that we sell are mallets.
Really?
That number has just continued to grow. I don't want to give an exact number because I know I will be wrong if I say an exact number, but I believe this year it's over 80%. So yeah, I know that's what you're seeing on the golf course and when you go, but that's exactly what our numbers show as well.
It's always a fun discussion to have because I mean, everyone's different, and we're going to talk about a product today that's going to fit a very specific type of golfer in a very positive way. But the reality is that, you know, straight back, straight through is not always the answer. But it's also like a presentation thing. There is a little bit of depth that goes into everything, and everyone has a unique shape that's going to work best for them. There's really no sense in fighting it other than, you know, is it easy enough to find a head with this specific toe hang and the specific, alignment aid on top. And that's where you guys come in, where a billion SKUs benefits us the most.
Yeah. And I think throughout the history of Odyssey, that's the way we've been perceived, is we have something for everybody. And that's why you see so many people, like you mentioned at the beginning, they're at least trying an Odyssey, or they've played it at some point throughout their, you know, golf life or their golf career. We've had inserts, we've had milled putters, we've had blades, mallets, all different price points, just something for everybody to try. But even the way that we stock our lines these days, you can tell it's 75%+ mallets in just what we offer, I'm curious about it. You know, blades aren't inherently bad, which I think is interesting. You know, they're still pretty forgiving. The center of gravity forward can have some advantages. But people have just gravitated, whether they align it better or they feel like, you know, having a deeper center of gravity feels more stable to them. I don't know what the answer is, but mallets clearly have been popular.
Yeah. Well, we've seen a lot of interesting versions of what makes putting easier, including grips the size of pool noodles. So obviously people are willing to try just about anything. You know, the funny part about this discussion, and I'll circle it back before we move on. I have a friend who I play with every week, and he's been eyeballing the Jailbird Mini all year long. And finally in October, he gets one. So I'm in Cincinnati. So our year's sort of wrapping up.
Yep.
And he gets it out there. And the first time out there, he's like, man, this thing's different, because he's gone from a milled putter to, you know, that insert. But he's also loving it. So it's so funny to see all these things come full circle and all these different options present, where he ends up in a very specific head in a very specific neck, and for him, I assume it's going to be a putter he's going to work well with for a long time, because the first 10 putts he had from 4 feet all went in, and he's like, I guess I'm good at putting now.
We bought ourselves some time with him gaming that one, that's for sure. That's a great part.
Well, the whole point of getting you on today was to talk about a new lineup from you guys, and I'm thrilled to get to know you a little bit as well, and I think everyone's excited to add another name from the Odyssey and Callaway cog to the THP community. But you have a new product coming out called S2S Tri-Hot. It looks definitely loud and different, and I think people are going to get really excited when they see it. Can you give me sort of an early step into how we landed on this and what we're looking at?
Yeah, this was probably one of the smoother processes we've had in terms of trying to figure out what we need to come out with next and what the direction is. And as all of you are aware, Zero Torque has really just been dominating not even just the putter space, but the golf space over the past really 18 months or so, specifically in the marketplace. You know, I know several of our customers have told us that 40% plus of what they're selling right now is a Zero Torque putter. It's just a wildly large amount. Had some success on tour, had some early conversions specifically last year. But with Zero Torque, you get a few common complaints. The shaft's too far back. There's too much shaft lean. I don't like having to use a weird grip. And you hear those over and over and over. And it can be from your general consumer. It can be from, you know, something like a forum. It can be from tour players. They're really the same ones. So we wanted to go and attack those and figure out, how do we make a putter that's Zero Torque? It's going to be popular. It's popular in the marketplace and on tour right now, but take some of those complaints away. So That's when we came out with Square to Square Tri-Hot, that Tri-Hot name coming from the different materials that we use, which are similar to the ones that we used back in Tri-Hot 5K in 2021, 22. So we have aluminum in the back, tungsten in the face, and then kind of a steel chassis there for the hosel, kind of housing everything. Really trying to bring that CG forward, bring that shaft forward so we can eliminate shaft lean, eliminate as much of that onset as possible, and eliminate the need to have kind of a funky grip on there that might not feel right.
Yeah, I mean, they look awesome. And if you look from the top end, it just looks like a natural, normal putter, aside from a very brilliant red you've gone with, which is kind of a step. But when you look at it from the sole side, there is a lot of depth to it. There's some, like I'm looking at the Rossi right now, and there's a ton of weight pulled away from it. You can see it all sort of hammered forward. How do you even get started in an R&D process like this? What does it take to even start with a concept like this?
Well, it starts with an idea, and we're lucky that we'd had at least a lot of time to kind of work on this Tri-Hot concept back in 5K, because it's not necessarily easy to do. It's not easy to get all those parts screwed, and we use a lot of foam VHB tape because it's good for sound. So getting that tape in there, getting those screws in there, the insert, moving weight around, it's not really an easy thing to do. It's great in concept, but then when you actually go to apply it, it can be a little bit more difficult. And that's kind of going along with the difficulties of how do you actually manufacture tungsten, things like that. It's very brittle, kind of difficult to work with. But we've got some really good designers. So you give them a goal and they're able to go and figure out how to apply it and how to get it there. And the designer, David Handy's his name, that actually worked on these, he specifically told me, he goes, listen, in like the 9 years that he actually just left Odyssey, he had moved for some family reasons. But before he left, he goes, in the 9+ years that I've been at Odyssey, these were the hardest ones that I've had to do. Trying to figure out how to get all those pieces together, how to get that center of gravity forward. And he's done some difficult concepts. He had to figure out how to model AI1, AI1 milled, some stuff that's been tough. But for him, he said this was every little tweak you make changes the center of gravity and where that center of gravity is relative to the shaft or the spud is really important in square to square. You have to be really in tune with where it is. So really difficult. I'm looking at them down here right now, but really difficult putters to make. But we're very, very, very excited about the way they turned out.
Yeah, it's fun to see the progression over the years on the way Odyssey's solved that material outward concept. I remember when EXO first came out and it was such a cool idea, and it's definitely changed a lot since then. But there's a clear effort to get as much weight away from the locations that don't matter and move them into the spots that will not only support the putting stroke but also support the miss, which I think no one talks about, which is kind of funny. Like, I want a putter that feels good, but you never hear the guys, I want a putter that makes putts when I hit it poorly, or, you know, I want to be at least close to the hole. We've seen some of those conversations, and I think outside of the fact that we're highly focused on the square to square concept here, you have to continue that conversation of supporting forgiveness in a putting stroke, right? Because we don't always hit center of the face, and no one's going out there. Not no one. Most of the folks who are buying these putters aren't spending, 2 hours hitting 1,000 putts before their rounds or on the weekend or whatever it may be. So obviously people are looking for forgiveness without the cost of, visuals or performance. So, you know, bringing all that together is a pretty wonderful thing. Is that idea of being in concert with one another a primary focus of this line, or is this to get a couple of these concepts married up to incorporate into square to square?
No, we're trying to get it all in these ones. And we've been lucky over the past couple of years, the putter market's really changed. I think when people think of Odyssey, at least I hope when people think of Odyssey, they think about innovation and performance. And that's something that we've always strived for, but it's not really something that's always kind of resonated in the market. Resonated in the marketplace. Where people, especially over the past decade or so, in the first 7 or 8 years of my career, milled putters were very, very popular. We were always kind of chasing Cameron in the marketplace and trying to figure out how to break in there while trying to do our own thing in terms of technology. And over the past couple of years, that's really flipped, and people are paying more for putters, they're paying more for technology. So we felt like for us, that was a really, really big positive. And then we could swing for the fences here. So to kind of answer your question, yes, it mattered where the CG went. It matters how these putters look. it matters how they perform. You know, we could have moved the CG even further forward, but at that expense, you're giving up all of the MOI that you could possibly get out of these. So, yeah, and then in terms of sound and feel, we could have taken more weight out of the back using something like a plastic, but we could be damaging the sound of the putter, the feel of the putter, and at that point, nobody wants to go hit a putt with it. So great, they look great. You know, the spuds at the top line are right at the leading edge there. But we needed to make sure that we had really good premium looks, really good sound of feel, needed to make sure that these sit square. That's something that we've really been focused on the last year and a half or so, and we'll continue to focus on. And then, of course, number one was performance. And they've got a new insert in them that we're calling AI Dual that is a strong performer. I think we'll probably talk more about that. But
yeah, I think you're reading my notes, actually, because I'm staring at that right now, getting ready to ask it. I assume you have to be incredibly careful at Odyssey when you're messing with inserts. There has to be. I think you guys have an identity that I would imagine you want to stay close to, because there are people, like I said, that really feel strongly about the sound that comes off their Odyssey putter. So first of all, I'm incredibly curious about the new insert. But secondly, how careful are you when you're designing to maintain that Odyssey identity with an insert you're creating?
We are extremely careful. So we sound test everything so we can go through, we can get amplitude and pitch off of each insert. We try to keep it really consistent with putter, with head shape, head mass, builds, everything, keep it as consistent as possible, actually measure and quantify what the sound of a putter is. Everything that we do is baselined off of White Hot. We know that's what we're known for. We know that's why people kind of originally got into Odyssey. So we try to not stray too far from that. But you can tell, you know, we've had some where we have strayed, and sometimes it's been great and sometimes it hasn't. You look back at Microhinge, like I said, sold decently well, but was probably on the softer end. And we heard a lot about it specifically from Tour. AI One sold pretty well, probably on the firmer end. And especially in the first few months, we heard a lot about that from Tour. I don't mean to knock them. I mean, it's good that we get feedback, but sometimes we listen, we nod our heads for a few months, see how it kind of develops. But we've been even more and more careful trying to get our inserts out to Tour sooner, see if we can get feedback. It helps that we have a putting green on our Tour truck, quantifying things sooner, trying different urethanes more than maybe we would have tried in the past, trying to make sure that we're bracketing all around White Hot so that we know where we land is the best spot that we could be.
You mentioned an interesting point earlier, talking about the firmness of golf balls, and there's no denying the quality of a experience off a urethane product. But there's also a lot of balls out there that are Sirlin, but are still quite soft and present a different pitch. I think one of the things that people don't wrap their head around too much, who just, you know, grab in their bag, whatever ball they've found comes out and that's what they play. Hopefully they wipe it off a little bit before they start using it. But, you know, there are folks who play golf like that who probably don't care, but there's also just as many, or probably as many, guys who play the same ball and expect the same experience. So it has to be a careful balance, but at the same time, how do you measure Tour, who's, let's say, using a firmer golf ball, with the amateurs who are pretty typically using a softer golf ball? They will generate different sounds just by ball alone off the head. So creating that balance, have you ever thought about, from a Tour perspective, having a slightly different insert just purely based on that?
Well, we do have different inserts for Tour that they use from time to time. The majority of them out there, I'll be very clear, are the production insert, the normal one that you buy off the rack. But every year with the urethanes, we do make sure that we have some softer ones and some firmer ones for Tour, just to meet their preferences. To answer your question, haven't necessarily thought about it, you know, having a different insert for Tour that we stock them with, and then a different insert for production. I think that, you know, people, if they've been playing with a softer ball for several years now, they're just used to that softer sound and feel. So if we come out with a soft insert, it's just, you know, oh, it's the same soft sound and feel that I've had in the past. I think the biggest difference comes if you switch golf ball, and you alluded to, and I'm guilty of the same thing. Luckily I get free golf balls now, which is nice. But you know, back when I was growing up, you play what you find. You know, we knew the decks that you could look under and who was home and who wasn't home, and, you know, where you could go find some. But it blows my mind. You know, I remember a couple years ago, and this is a little off topic, but I find it interesting, so I'm going to go there. Doing some golf ball testing when we're first coming out with Chrome Tour X, just making sure there was nothing funky off of them. And we're using white hot and a milled putter, measuring sound, feel, and speed off the face. And as we then went to a Chrome Soft, so Pro V, Chrome Tour, Pro V1X, Chrome Tour X, we're all pretty much the same speed off the face, nothing really funky there. And then as we got to a Chrome Soft and a Super Soft, and you can tell even when you go hit them on a golf course, but that speed off the face as the ball got incrementally softer, and then once you got to Super Soft, is so much faster than something that's a firmer golf ball. And it was mind-blowing. I was like, man, if you just picked up a Chrome Soft after you've been playing a Chrome Tour X for five holes, took one out of your bag, the speed that's going to come off that putter face is completely different. And I would imagine would take a couple holes even to get used to it. You might lose the golf ball. I would by the time I got used to it. So just kind of interesting. We're always very, very focused and in tune with that. We want to make sure that, you know, at least for the tour balls, we're kind of where they expect. We're not changing speeds too much year over year, but yeah, I think I got a little off topic, but we definitely.
No, that's great. I mean, the name of the show is Off Course. You are welcome to talk about whatever you want. We've already talked a little bit about baseball. I can bring that up if you want, or we can keep talking about
You can just get that one out of the way. If you want to rip the Band-Aid off,
no, go ahead. I'm gonna hold on to this. It's awkward, but I love it. So back to the insert a little bit. It's a different concept, but it's a dual layer urethane. What does that mean?
So we have two urethane layers. For lack of a better term, there's a cover and a core, like you might see on a golf ball. But it's something that we noticed in AI1. We actually started with AI1 milled in the development. You might expect that that's a little bit easier. It's one material. So a little bit easier to manufacture, easier to test and verify as a concept. But as we moved into AI1, we saw some performance advantages that we didn't necessarily expect with adding some urethane over the face. So as we went into this next insert AI Dual, we thought, okay, well, hey, what if we try two urethane layers, you know, novel concept. But we went and we used our AI software, which really just allows us to say, hey, what's the total thickness? How thick and thin do you want each layer? And where do you want to move them? So we give it some zones. It can pull the layers. But this year, we also let it select the urethane type or the urethane hardness. So it goes through it. It suggests a design. We went ahead and we prototyped that. And early on, it was a really, really soft urethane cover. Really, really firm urethane core, and we're seeing really good performance out of it, both in the way of added top spin and speed consistency across the face, which was the goal that we were going for. So from there, then, you know, AI can suggest some things, which is really nice. It gets you in a good spot, but the human element still is extremely important. So we had to then go dial in sound, feel. We added some grooves, which changed sound and feel. Wanted to get those out on tour to get sound and feel approved, do our own testing to make sure that we were near white hot. So we still ended up with a softer cover material and a firmer core material, which is kind of a varying, we call it VFT, variable face thickness, on both of the layers there, where you have speed consistency across the face, and then the construction and groove add some roll.
So I was curious about the grooves, because in many cases, while it does change the way the ball rolls, it also changes the sound perspective that you get off the face, right?
It does. And we keep talking, we've got it, you know, presenting to customers. We've got a PowerPoint we go through, and we brought in 72 physical prototypes, 72 different designs. So different urethanes, different grooves, different hardness of the urethanes, and then even different shapes. I mean, as you get more urethane in there, it tends to be a little bit quieter. So this one this year kind of wraps around the leading edge. And then, yeah, so it grew, it got a little bit bigger. So that's going to be a little bit quieter or softer. So we just want to make sure that we had everything covered and make sure that what we were actually prototyping matched what we were coming in with in production. And that was something that in years past, we get close in prototypes and then make a tweak and the production insert comes in. It's not quite what we tested. Performs great still, but maybe sound and feels a little different than what we thought we were getting. We wanted to do it right this year and make sure exactly what we were testing was exactly what we were going to come out with. So we definitely oversampled, but I think that was a good thing. So we landed on a really nice sound and feel.
Any truth to the rumor that you use insert acoustics as ASMR to go to sleep at night?
Listen, no comment on that. You can ask my wife. She goes to sleep to it too.
I kind of love the direction we've gone with this show, because I feel like the primary conversation with TriHot Square to Square is going to be the setup, the structure, and the head choices. I love that we got to spend a little bit of time talking about the skeleton, talking about the insert, the performance concepts that you've put in there, because I feel like they all matter an awful lot. And while it will be a focus, I think people's eyes will get drawn to the head shapes and will get drawn to the whole square to square concept. So it's important to talk about that a lot. More specifically, this isn't the first square to square concept you've brought out. I'm curious how that's performed the other lineup and whether you felt like you took more from that into this.
The other lineups performed really well, which has been great. And there are still a lot of people that like it. They like the forward shaft lean. You know, we did some internal testing here maybe 4 or 5 months ago, just kind of going over the setup of, all right, hey, we've got our kind of traditional, for lack of a better term, square to square. CG's a little further back. They're shaft lean versus these tri-hot square to squares. And one of our biggest surprises was how many people actually still really like that traditional, for lack of a better term, square to square setup. So still had a majority of people. It was a smaller majority than we expected that liked this setup or the traditional one, but some people like being locked in with that forward shaft lean and thought that we did a good job the first time around. So, you know, with how hot it was in the market, we had to get something out there. We had to work fast. But it's really nice because as you get it out there, you get a lot of feedback. And I think over the past couple of years, we've been really good at listening. Feels weird to say it's kind of tooting our own horns, a little selfish, but I think we've done a pretty good job both with the market and with tour of just listening. What do they not like? And then trying to take that and figure out how we can fix it. And, you know, the ways that we were able to change it this time around are not cheap, but we got lucky too that people are spending a little bit more on putters and they'll pay for technology now. So incorporated some things.
Well, it's also interesting that the market has sort of a mind of its own, and it tends to lean into the things that are hot for whatever reason, despite the fact that this technology isn't exactly new, especially from an Odyssey's perspective, having the toe up. I mean, you literally had a putter named Toe Up that people didn't quite wrap their head around the same way they are with this one. So it's not like it's a new concept in total, but people are reacting to it totally differently. Every company, it seems like, is making a decision that incorporates this concept into it. Is that a hard thing for you as someone who's in R&D, understanding the benefits of these things, to see something that maybe got missed along the way and said, like, if you just paid attention when we did this, you'd be so far ahead of the game?
Yeah, I'm passionate, let's put it that way, in a nice way. So when we do miss things, or if there was something that we think we did really good on, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago, that, you know, microhinge would be one where we got quite a bit of negative feedback on how soft it was. And now we get a ton of positive feedback. It's like, come on, man, we knew it was good from the start. No, 100%. But, you know, there's a lot of merit to it. It's interesting as we go through testing. I'm sure you've seen the same thing, and they're the same things on your forums where, you know, some people will start playing a square to square, they'll buy one and they'll hate it. They'll swear they putt worse, or a zero torque type of model. And then you get a good percentage of people that go in and they say, my putting's completely transformed, I can't putt without it. So It's interesting. You know, Toe Up was one where they did it really quick. It was actually between when I was an intern and when I started. I remember they launched it. I was like, how did I not see that when I was interning there? But it was an interesting idea, did pretty well, especially over in Japan for what it was. Then we released an inserted version, you know, sold okay, and then never really did it again. But you know, as marketing's gotten better, as they've looked a little bit, you know, different or better, people have wanted to try them, and now they've given them a chance. So nothing that we can be really upset about. We just got to make sure that we're capitalizing, and we talk a lot in the building about leapfrogging. How do we continue to make it better and better each iteration?
Mm-hmm.
No, we've gotten over the frustration phase, Dan.
For now. Well, you've landed on 3 head shapes, I assume, at least to start, plus the Jailbird gets a bonus in the Cruiser. Was it hard to land on those 3 specific heads for this line?
Not really. This is one that we wanted to keep tight with how difficult it is to manufacture and design. Jailbird and number 7 are by far and away our top 2. We know that. Everybody knows that. It's not a secret. And then Rossi, just kind of the early sketches look good, and we decided to go with it. You know, John Rahm's played a Rossi.
You may as well call it Rahmsy now.
Yeah, it's exactly it. It's what everyone, you know, kind of associates it with. So, you know, early ones kind of came in and looked really good, and that was kind of a really nice bonus 3rd one. That's the one I've gotten a surprising amount of comments on in a positive way, that people have been like, hey, yeah, I want to try that. I want to play that. Do you have some of those around at your desk? Yeah.
Huh. You said, no, those are already in my golf bag. Thank you.
Yeah, I built 4 of them in different configurations. I'm lost.
Nice.
No.
They make a lot of sense, the ones you picked. I think the folks who tend to lean towards something like a Jailbird are usually looking for the most support they can possibly get. I've rolled one myself. It feels like I'm cheating a little bit. You lose a little bit of the control you'd get on a more traditional putting shape with a more traditional putting stroke. But overall, like, Newt, who I think is still hanging out with you in there, knows J-Man pretty well. He's a big Jailbird guy, and I rolled one of his earlier in the year. I'm like, dude, this is like cheating. It makes no sense, but it's a lot of fun to use. So, you know, I recognize the benefits of seeing these three shapes, and I'm really curious, because we've talked to her a fair bit already, how they react to things. But also, I assume they get their hands on things a little bit earlier than most folks do. So I'm sure they've had some perspective on these already. What kind of feedback have you gotten from that?
Well, they've called me three times this morning asking for more, which I'm associating with being a good thing. But the early feedback has been really good. They had them out there in Jackson for the first time. And it's a little bit of a tough time to get them out there because guys are coming off a longer stretch of or can be coming off of either a break or a longer stretch of playing. You've got Japan mixed in there before or after. I don't remember which one it was. So I think the true test will be here in a couple weeks when we've seeded a lot of them. I know they're sending a lot of them out next week. Early feedback's been great in terms of sound and feel. A lot of players have been intrigued. We just haven't had anybody pull the trigger and want to make the switch yet. But I think come January, you get kind of the big crew back out there. People have been off around the holidays. I think that'll be the true test. But early feedback's been really good and seating's been good. So just waiting for some guys to make the switch.
I love it. I think it's interesting because I'm such a fan of the crazy blue that AI1 had, especially the I rolled a milled 6T for a while, and it was stunning to look down at. But these are a lot more visually in your face in a good way, I think. Mm-hmm. Not to mention you had the white and blues coming off, like the Jailbird my buddy has white and blue. Is part of this decision to go with the red and black to just be a little louder?
Yeah, I think there are a few things that go into it. You mentioned the blue in AI1 and just separating it from what AI1 is, so going with something different. But the biggest one is just Odyssey being red. We've been associated with red for so long. It's typically in our logo as red on the swirl. And so we wanted to really get back to that. But the other nice part is when you have a big chunk of aluminum on a putter, you can do colors and anodization that you can't do in PVD, and red is one of those.
Okay.
And so, we've had some people asking for red putters for a long time. Typically, you have to go paint that. We don't think it's as premium, but when you do it in anodization, it looks really, really clean and it pops for sure. So that was something that we had the opportunity to do here, and we just couldn't pass that one up.
Interesting. Yeah, I almost wore a nice crew neck Odyssey shirt that I have here with a beautiful blue Odyssey logo on it. I chose the Toronto Blue Jays baseball shirt.
It's
I don't so know if you're.
It's I respect it. I'm happy for you in kind of in a small way. Maybe I'm not that maybe that happy for you.
Oh man, it's a little bit of information for the folks out there. Eric is a Mariners fan. Sounds like you're not too thrilled about the situation about being a Mariners fan or how that came about, but playoffs are what they are. And it was an unbelievable battle. This is actually coming out next week. And so Toronto has a couple games against LA to prove themselves before this goes live. So hopefully this doesn't bite me in the back too bad, but we'll see. Did you at least enjoy the series and the playoffs this year? They were incredible.
I got MLB TV early in the season. I like the way that the Mariners are playing. I grew up small town Northwest guy. All I lived and breathed was baseball. I grew up right by a golf course. I love playing golf, but baseball was like my first thing. So just a diehard Mariners guy. Like, I've got teams I root for, but Mariners are by far and away out of any sport number one. So it's not a fun existence. You grow up as a kid and they're pretty good. You know, they've got Alex Rodriguez, Ken Griffey Jr., all those guys. And then about 20 years of being the worst team in baseball. So I did enjoy it. It's tough to say, it stinks. It stinks that they're out, but they made the ALCS. They made it farther than they've ever made it. I thoroughly enjoyed it, but I'm bummed to see them out. That's for sure.
Yeah. I was watching, I think it was game six. You guys took, you guys had the 3-2 lead. So I'm for those who live under a rock and don't know I'm a big Blue Jays fan, like painfully big at this point, I think, based on my son's sleep schedule and trying to not scream during the games. But during game six, I'm thinking in my head, we were so bad to start the year. The fact that we've come this far, I'm so proud of the team. They've really created an identity for themselves. Seattle is a really impressive team to go against. That I watched the whole Detroit series. It was crazy fun as well. And I'm thinking like the end is near. And then, you know, what happened happened and I couldn't be happier. But I know the feeling because like, Toronto's 30 years plus since they were last in the World Series. So, you know, I'm sure it will come. I think Julio Rodriguez is one of the most entertaining baseball players out there. So
he rocks, and having him and Cal Raleigh is kind of their core is so fun. It reminds me of when I was a kid and they had those good young guys, and you know, unlike then, now they have them on actual contracts to keep them. So I just hope that this is just the beginning. That's what I keep telling myself. It's probably what I told myself in like 2002 and look how that turned out, but hopefully it's different this time around.
The big dumper, man. He kills Toronto every time they play. I'm so sick of seeing him, but he's fun to watch. There's no doubt about it.
He loves hitting in Canada. That's for sure.
Yeah. Hey, wrapping up the show a little bit on Tryhot Square to Square. What's the kind of final thoughts from you from development to release? What's the storyline you guys are going with? What can you tell THPers who are thinking about trying them?
You know, I think I alluded to this earlier, but we internally talk so much about leapfrogging, and this is what we feel like is a leapfrog in that zero torque space. And one thing that I would be remiss not to mention is how we did it. We talked about the aluminum and how good it looks, and it's hogged out. You can see a lot from the bottom. But that tungsten in the face is something that I don't think that anybody's going to do, and I don't think anybody else is going to be able to get there with CGs this far forward. The spud on the top line, and these we have about 140 grams of tungsten. It's like 40% of the headweight of these putters in tungsten alone. It's been heavily penalized by some recent rare earth things going on. It's expensive. It's a big investment from the company, a big investment from us on a design end. Like I said, it's brittle. It's tough to work with. It's expensive, but it's something we felt like we had to do, and I don't think anybody else is going to go ahead and make that investment. So if you want a different feel in your putting stroke, but you want that similar feeling setup to where you've been really throughout your entire life, this is something that you've got to go try. The insert feel is softer. It's addicting, in my opinion. I really, really like it. Just everything was so well thought out on these. I think it's just a really special lineup, and we're excited for them to come out.
I love it. I have one more question for you, and it has nothing to do with Odyssey. You okay with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Give me one product that Callaway has designed, whether it's a ball or a club, that has absolutely rocked your socks in the last year. What is something someone has to go hit?
Oh, my goodness. In the past year?
The past year. So current line.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what we even have, because my irons are like a year and a half old.
Which ones?
I've got actually the only clubs I've ever begged for. I was shameful. The X prototype. We did a limited run of them in Japan. They're similar to the X Forged.
Okay.
And they were all forged and machined in Japan. And I love the shape. I absolutely love the way they feel. I will probably never switch until I wear those grooves out. So
That
would be my answer, but it's not in the current product lineup. And now I'm thinking of things that aren't, like you mentioned, TD is so good, but that's not really something that I don't know if we sell it. Do we sell it? I'm looking at Jeff. We do. Okay. I'm going TD then.
Okay.
I love it. I feel like the addicting ones, though, tend to be, you know, they're the ones that have stuck in your bag for so long. Mm-hmm. But in the past year, that TD driver, I think that's got to be the one.
Okay.
Spin turns over.
I'll be honest with you. I would bet in a poll of 10 five Callaway employees, if someone doesn't mention UW at least twice, it's a crazy day in the office.
That was the one I was going to answer till you said in the last year, because I still have the original one, 19-degree, cut down to my old 4 hybrid length in the bag, and it's never coming out.
Yeah. Oh, wow. You're not even messing with the new stuff.
Quick plug, because she deserves it. My wife actually works at Callaway too in fairways and hybrids. I know she's got a 19-degree sitting there in case I ever do crack it. I requested that she never give that one away. So I do have a replacement. But even so, it's so good. I love it so much.
So I actually hit a UW for the first time in a while. I've been a super hybrid guy for forever. Mm-hmm. I hit one for the first time in forever, and I get it. I do. There's good arguments there, but But I need to know, since wife is a Dodgers fan, as I've heard, you are cheering for the Jays, right?
Listen, I'm not going to keep it offensive here. I grew up very close to the Canadian border, you know, and so we've got feelings. I love Canada. I really do. But I love just to root against Canadian teams just for fun.
God, that hurts me.
Which is mean, too, because I root for the Canucks in hockey, which doesn't make any sense. But we didn't have the Kraken back when I was growing up. My wife will kill me if I root for anybody but the Dodgers.
That's great. And
happy
you can
wife.
Tell us all the stories.
Life. I like my life. I want to stay alive. I got to go for the Dodgers. And I'm probably still in a little bit of pain from the series. But ask me in a week and we'll see where we
That's fine. I can edit all that out anyway. It's fine. It's not a big deal.
Perfect.
Eric, hey, man, it was a great time chatting with you, get to know you a little bit, hearing about Tryout Square to Square. It looks awesome. I think you guys absolutely crushed it. I'm excited to hear THPers react to the tech that's inside it, the performance benefits of it more than anything, because, man, you guys hit that well. Well done.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to know you as well. It's been great.
Awesome. Well, hey, folks, if you are playing golf this weekend, have fun. It's not Cali perfect here in Ohio, but we'll try and get out and play some golf as the cold weather comes on. We'll see you guys next week. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey everybody, Dr. Brown. Georgia says I can't call myself doctor because I don't have a PhD, but I've been doing this for almost 25 years, so that's good enough for an honorary PhD, so we're going with Dr. Brown. Back here at Shaft University. This question is about EI curves and flex, and are they the same thing or how they interact? And flex is really just a construct that we put on the shafts to try to help guide people into what shaft they should play, if you're talking about RS or X. Those are slightly related to EI profile, probably really just how stiff the shaft is in the handle. A lot of times that is how we define flex, is by how stiff the shaft is at the butt end. Where EI comes into play is defines the middle and the tip end of the shaft and how stiff or soft those are. Usually we don't incorporate that into flex. So when you see stiff flex on a shaft or X flex, usually you can relate that to the EI portion of the butt end of the shaft, but the rest of the shaft has nothing to do with that. Hope that helps clear things up. Thanks.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.